Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
At Blinds.com, it's not just about window treatments. It's about you, your style, your space, your way. Whether you DIY or want the pros to handle it all, you'll have the confidence of knowing it's done right. From free expert design help to our 100% satisfaction guarantee, everything we do is made to fit your life and your windows. Because at Blinds.com, the only thing we treat better than windows is you. Visit Blinds.com now for up to 45% off with minimum purchase, plus a professional measure at no cost. Rules and restrictions apply.
What's up, guys? I'm Jordan Robinson, host of the podcast, The Women's Hoop Show. We're heading towards the home stretch of the WNBA season, and there is so much to get into every episode. Twice a week, I'm joined by one of my amazing co-hosts as we dissect the biggest games, performances, and even some off-court drama. The playoffs are quickly approaching, and now is the best time to tune in. Who will come away as this year's champion? The competition is heating up, and so are we. Listen to and follow The Women's Hoop Show, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Hey, Bills Mafia. We know there's only one topic every day. All Bills, all the time. And now Matt Bove and Sal Capaccio are going really deep, talking Bills all year long, because it's always game day in Buffalo.
Okay, I could make an argument that the first couple weeks of September are the best 2 weeks of weather in Western New York generally every year. What do you think?
Sounds like you're coming around to my fall is elite take. I know I'm not alone in that theory, but these are the types of days that you absolutely live for. I love a day. What is it right now? My phone says it's 75 degrees and sunny. I love a day that's like this, that starts a little bit cool. I feel like you can be productive in the morning. You can go outside, take the dog on a walk, go on a run, do what you got to do without it being super, super hot. This is the peak of the day. And then at the evening, it gets a little bit cooler. Maybe if you want to have a little bonfire in the backyard. These are the perfect weather days, and I will always stand by that.
And the reason I'm bringing it up, because if you're on the audio side of things listening, thank you. We appreciate it. But you're missing what we're doing today. Matt and I are actually outside the field house and where the Bills practice, and over in between us, give a look, Matt, if you're on the video side of things, you see it. Look at that. That is the brand new stadium. That is new Highmark Stadium coming together. It's right behind us. And we're doing this episode outside after we just watched the Bills have their, basically their media open part of practice before the team kind of closes it off. And then we go back in later. So we're here at One Bills Drive. It's the start of Jets week. We appreciate you coming on. It's always game day in Buffalo, wherever you pod. We appreciate it. Of course, on audio, iTunes, Spotify, the Odyssey app, and of course, at Sal Sports on YouTube. Lots of great new video watchers coming aboard, and we really appreciate that. All right, let's get to the news of the day. Tre'Davious White back at practice.
Yeah, Trey White back at practice. Sean McDermott said before practice it would be limited for him. This is the first time we have seen Trey practice. And what is it, about 3 weeks since they...
August 21st was the last time he was out here.
So that is when he got injured. We didn't know what the severity of the injury was going to be. Obviously, that led him to missing this game this past weekend. I don't want to assume anything. Him being back out of practice is a very good sign. I wonder if they go a little bit slower with him because of the injury history and because they, I'm assuming they like what they saw from Dorian Strong. I think if they're both healthy and they're ready to go, Trey White would be the guy that would play. But if it's a question, then I think you would give him another week just to make sure then he's fully back and ready, especially coming up on a short week on Thursday, right? If the plan was going to be to return him, maybe you give him a little bit of a longer runway, you play Dorian Strong, and then he comes back for the Thursday game.
Okay. In-depth, fun question for you. Ready? Yeah. Okay. Do you remember all the talk we had in the offseason about, boy, Tre'Davious White versus Max Harrison, and how does that work? And we had a big thing on, well, not going to say Trey, it's Trey's job to lose, but, you know, Max Harrison has to kind of win it. After what you saw from Dorian Strong, now knowing that Max Harrison isn't even available for at least three more games, is there anything to be said for when Tre'Davious White is healthy? Is it possible that Dorian Strong could snatch that job?
It's possible, but I don't think it's probable.
What would have to happen?
Trey not being good. I think that's what would have to happen. If you notice that like there is a drop off between Dorian Strong and Tre'Davious White, I think that they would play Dorian Strong. That being said, I just think from the mental side of things, they trust Trey more than anybody else in that room just because he knows the defense so well. And if that's what they want out of their second defender, their second corner, I should say, then I think that's why I believe he is going to be the one that plays when he is ready to go and when he is healthy. I think Max Hairston will have to play himself into being the primary backup. That's assuming it doesn't, you know, go off the rails. And then Dorian Strong would be just your nice fourth option. Maybe the guy we thought Dane Jackson was going to be when they signed him and brought him back.
It's a good way to put it. I would agree with you. And I would say the same thing I said about Max versus Trey, which is it's Trey's job. And I don't like to say it's his job to lose, but the other guy's got to kind of go get it. He's got to show he can do everything. In this particular case, you're saying Trey would have to not be good, but I think Dorian would have to continue to play at a level where every single week you can't have any faults, any mistakes, really, to have them say, wait a minute, we have a rookie out there. What's he doing? And then Max Hairston comes back and look, we all know what happened in 2022. Kyrie Elam was drafted in the first round. Christian Benford drafted in the sixth round. They actually played a little bit both early on, and then it became Christian Benford's job. And we know it didn't work out for Kyrie Elam. It is a good, not even problem, situation to have if everybody's healthy and you figure it out later. You need a good roster and a deep roster. Injuries happen all the time. Heck, the nickel corner, Taron Johnson, isn't practicing today because of an injury, a quad injury. So I'm not going to cross any of those bridges until they have to come to it. What I think is really cool and great for this team is if everybody can be healthy at some point and they have to start thinking about things like that.
The only thing that I'll push back on a little bit is I don't know how good the room is. And even though we saw what I would qualify as a solid game from Dorian Strong the other night, they really didn't test either of the corners very much because they had so much success on the ground. And to the Ravens' credit, they've got a really unbelievably dynamic offense, but the receivers aren't the scariest part of their offense. The scariest part of their offense are Lamar Jackson and Derrick Henry, both on the ground. So I am curious to see how these guys will hold up against maybe a more pass first offense or a couple wide receivers that could be trickier matchup. So I liked what I've seen from Dorian Strong, but I don't feel like, hey, we should be having a conversation about him maybe being the guy even when Trey is healthy and Max Hairston is back. That feels a little bit too optimistic, I'll say.
Don't disagree. I think if he stays playing relatively solid, but I agree they didn't really test him, that's a good thing to obviously have. And then you can make a decision. And then if Max Hairston comes back, you can kind of let him kind of ramp up a little bit more and then we'll see where it goes. Okay. The other piece of news today that I think was really interesting for me, it wasn't even news. It was Sean McDermott's words and demeanor. He said several times, this week needs to be hard. This has to be a hard week of practice. He mentioned how basically, I'm not going to say like, it's not that the Bills are treating it like they lost, right? They didn't. You're going to treat it like they win. You celebrate the wins. He even said that. But this is an angry team of how they played. They are not happy with how they played. I think that's important.
I think it is important. I think that in some ways they got embarrassed, especially on defense. And I think that they'll hang their hats on the fact that they were able to get the stops at the end of the game and that got them back into the game and for Josh Allen to be able to move them down the field and get the points. Nobody on that defense, maybe besides Ed Oliver, should be happy with how they played. If you're somebody who goes back and watches the film or if you just go back and watch the game, there were missed tackles, there were bad angles, there were uncharacteristic whiffs. Just across the board, it was a really uninspiring defensive effort. And I think that that's going to be an emphasis this week. I think it's going to be like, look, guys, you won. Good on you for making the plays when you needed to, but this was not nearly good enough. Now, I will say, playing against the Jets is not as scary as playing against the Ravens for defense. But the Jets looked good against the Steelers. I watched pretty much that entire game because that was the 1 o'clock game on CBS before I head down to the stadium. And I was like, wow, Justin Fields making some plays. Breece Hall looked like a different version of Breece Hall than we've seen in a couple of years. So I liked what I saw from the Jets. I do not think that this is a cakewalk by any stretch of an opponent. I don't think this is a get right game. I think this is a, if your defense has a good day, I think you'll limit them and you'll probably hold them under like 30-25. That would be the goal for sure. Anything less than 20, I feel like you'd really like your chances of winning. But this is not going to be like a super simple matchup for the Bills to get right. This isn't Mike White and the gang a couple years ago in New York. I think that there's a higher ceiling to this Jets offense.
I agree 100%. And I'll take it a step further. The way they ran the ball specifically against the Steelers last week, Breece Hall looked really good. The offensive line blocked well. And they have a very dynamic running quarterback. Now, he's not Lamar Jackson. Nobody really is running the ball like that. And Breece Hall isn't Derrick Henry. He's a totally different type of runner. I think the Jets will come into this game, Matt, and say, we're going to try to replicate exactly what the Ravens did. Because why not? Why wouldn't you do that? Any team should. Any team should right now look at the Bills and say, we're going to run right at you, and we're going to force you to stop the run. You're going to have to prove that you can stop the run. And the Bills know, though, that a team like the Jets is going to do that to them this week.
And I think that that should give you more reasons to be optimistic, or maybe a reason to be successful for the defense, because if you know that that's what another team is going to try and do, which I think is what's going to happen, then you should be better suited to stop it. And I think that the Jets are going to present some problems for the Bills defense, especially the linebackers and the safeties and all of that. But I don't think it's not something that they're capable of. They do this kind of every year. You know, we talked about this a little bit on the postgame press conference, or the postgame podcast that we did. The Bills get gashed at least once or twice a year, and usually then they respond and the defense looks better. Now, the thing that's concerning is they're usually getting gashed by the quality of opponent that they play down the road, and that's why the defense continues to fail them in the playoffs, right? Because they could come out this week and the defense could look great. But the conversation shouldn't be that the defense is fixed. It's that they look better against lesser competition. And what are they going to do when they get another Kansas City, Baltimore, one of those high-powered offenses? So, It's an interesting good and, you know, kind of.
I would say it this way, too, though. The worst matchup in the NFL might be the Ravens for the Bills, just by how the teams are built. Yeah. The Bills are more lighter and athletic on defense on purpose. The Ravens are built to run the ball at you with Derrick Henry. It is the worst matchup. I mean, the Kansas City can't do what the Ravens do. They can beat you in other ways. They cannot do to the Bills what the Ravens do. This team they're playing, the Jets, they can do it a little bit more because they do have Breece Hall. They do have Justin Fields. The good thing about this for the Bills is they just saw this last week, right? Uh-huh. Like, you're seeing a team. It's like in college football, when you play a run and shoot team, an air raid offense, and the next week you play Army, you're like, oh my God, what a difference. That is not the case here.
Yeah, and there should be some principles and some philosophies that they had last week that carry over to this game, especially with how much we expect Justin Fields is going to run. Like, we're looking at the stat sheet from last week. Justin Fields had 12 runs for 48 yards, averaged 4 yards a carry. Breece Hall had 19 rushes for 107 yards. That's against a Steelers defense who I both would say, I think, it's a good Steelers defense, or we're expecting it to be a good defense, maybe not a great defense, maybe not what you prototypically think of the Steelers as, but a defense that at least is not going to roll over. I think there's going to be some options for the Bills in this game. I think the Jets are going to hit some chunk plays, and I think they're going to have some success on the ground. The difference for me here, and once again, we're getting ahead of ourselves a little bit, but the Ravens were so incredibly efficient on third down that every time the Bills got them into one of those situations, it felt like they converted, and then they were on with their next drive. I think the Bills will be able to have a bit more success against this Jets defense, or this Jets offense, on those situations, because I just don't think the offense is as good. I don't think it's as dynamic. I don't think they have as many options. And you know what? Another thing I'm really interested in this week, with the Ravens specifically, Zay Flowers lines up all over the place. Having Christian Benford follow him doesn't make sense for what they do. But I wonder, is this a Garrett Wilson day? Does Christian Benford follow Garrett Wilson and you say, we like that matchup, try and beat us other places? I'd really be interested in that.
I agree with you that they don't have quite the dynamic offense, but I would push back one thing and say, out of the two teams, they have the Jets, the best wide receiver the Bills will face. The Jets, the Ravens don't have a Garrett Wilson. Mm-hmm. Zay Flowers is good. Garrett Wilson is really good. Yeah. 7 catches, 95 yards. This guy, he's beaten the Bills before. Remember Monday night, he beat Trey White on that ball up top, right? This is a really dynamic, great wide receiver who just got paid. This is a guy they're going to want to get involved. And I agree with you that the question will be, do the Bills tell Christian Benford, okay, we need you to follow him?
I think he would love that. Do you have that stat sheet up again? Yeah. Bring up the stat sheet from the Jets game. So receiving. Garrett Wilson led the way with 7 catches for 95 yards. After that, the next guy was Breece Hall with 2 catches. Nobody else had more than 2 catches in this game. So I do think that that's why the idea and the strategy behind it is Garrett Wilson. If you put Christian Benford on Garrett Wilson, Garrett Wilson's going to win some. Like, it's just natural. Christian Benford's going to win a couple reps. But then you force all of those other guys here to try and beat you. And that's when you should have an advantage, because they can't go as deep as the Ravens can. Obviously, the Ravens have Lamar and Derrick Henry, but when it's not Zay Flowers, it's Bateman. And then it was DeAndre Hopkins making a ridiculous one-handed catch. Mark Andrews didn't really do anything in the game, but he's at least a legitimate receiving option. So that's why I just don't think from top to bottom the Jets are as deep. I mean, really, no team is. to comparing to the Ravens. I mean, the Ravens offense, I legit think, is going to be the best offense the Bills play this year, and they just happen to do it in week one.
And something interesting Bobby Babbage said when we met with him on Monday, you know, we talked a lot, Matt, about without Ricard, without Likely, how, oh, that really hurts the Ravens. And of course it does, right? I mean, they're two really good players and what they want to do. But Bobby Babbage said, look, they had different personnel in there that they were ready to use, basically. Like in the Bills, you know, they had to identify that and they had to kind of adjust to that. The Ravens had a long time to know they weren't going to have Ricard and Likely, and they prepared very well. So when you start seeing things as the season goes on, you get a little bit more of a feel. In week one, it's a little different. You got all this time. No one knows anything about each other, and you go out there and do it. The other thing the Ravens did, and I think the Bills need to be buttoned up here. Now, granted, maybe on the road, actually, they'll be better, which is weird to say because home is supposed to be your advantage. But home, in this case, I thought the Ravens did an excellent job coaching and to use it against the Bills. The Ravens quick snapped. You didn't use a lot of motion. They got up to the line. They made the Bills try to identify. And before they could, they snapped the ball. There were multiple times, Matt, where Terrell Bernard was looking to communicate and the ball was snapped. There were multiple times where safeties were moving or communicating and the ball was snapped. The Ravens did a great job of that. And I expect the Jets to do the same thing, which is get out of the huddle, don't let the Bills recognize, and go run their play.
And this also, too, you know, we're talking about the cornerback position because of Trey White. We talked a lot about the safety position because it was just not good enough. The Bills linebackers need to be better in this game. There were a couple moments in that game where they really looked like they were mismatched, or they missed a tackle, or they got thrown off, or a block kind of sealed the alley for somebody else. Like, I want to see more from a guy like Terrell Bernard. I want to see more from a player like Matt Milano. And there were flashes, but I feel like this is going to be an opportunity for the linebackers to have a strong outing and give this team and this, you know, I guess, it's really just the team, a little bit more faith in that side of the ball. Because the other thing here is that I think the Jets defense is going to be a harder matchup. I wouldn't have said this before the game, but then watching what the Bills were able to do, I think the Jets defense is legit, and they've given the Bills historically some headaches over the years. So I don't think that this is going to be a game where the Bills are just going to roll in and score 41 points. Like, I know that the Steelers had a lot of success against the Jets defense, but to score 40 points every week is not like an easy thing to do.
They had 34 points total, the Steelers. They were only 4 of 10 on third down. The Jets did a very nice job on third down. The Steelers had 271 total yards in this game.
Yeah.
I mean, the Jets had they did a nice job. And they do have some nice players over there. And as Sean McDermott said, he's coached with Steve Wilks. He knows that Steve Wilks is a really good coach. Eric Washington, a former Bills defensive line coach, is now with the Jets as well. Okay. So he's there. So that's a familiar face. Speaking of D lines, I need more from the Bills D line. And what I mean by that is they have to be better at tackling at the point of attack. I thought one of the reasons why the linebackers weren't that good, and you're right, was because they were put in a position where they should have been able to make plays because the D line was helping out. I thought the D line did.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Didn't do enough to tackle at the line of scrimmage, leaving those linebackers and safeties exposed.
I think the whole defense was a mess besides Ed Oliver, and Ed Oliver had some splash plays and really big moments. And, you know, I think the corners were fine too. I wouldn't say great day or bad day for Benford or for Dorian Strong. I think they were fine, but it was just it was a mess. It was sloppy. It was just very uncharacteristic of what this team prides itself on. And then you start to think, like, are they built the right way? It's a lot of flash, it's a lot of finesse, it's a lot of speed. Can they go up against these physical football teams like the Ravens and win those matchups? And I mean, they did on Sunday, but a lot of that was because of what the offense was able to kind of bail them out with. I think the Jets are going to try and make it a similar type of game, sloppy, physical, and just run it down your throat until you can prove that you can stop them. But I do think the Bills will have a better chance of doing that against this opponent than the Ravens, and really any opponent that they play, compared to just how dynamic Baltimore is.
I'm Kristen Press.
And I'm Tobin Heath.
We're World Cup winners, Olympians, and the hosts of The Recap Show.
Every week, we sit down with the icons, disruptors, and game changers on the field and beyond it to talk victories, heartbreaks, and everything in between.
We've built a space where athletes, changemakers, and people creating the future of women's sports can show up and show off as their full, unapologetic selves.
Follow and listen to The Recap Show wherever you get your podcasts.
Jordan Poyer just showed up a few weeks ago. It seems like every time we see him out here, he's doing a little bit more practice, ramping up just to be ready in case. Is there a situation or a scenario where you think, or when you think, the Bills would say, okay, I've seen enough from these safeties, we have to make a change in some respect, whether that's Jordan Poyer or even Jordan Hancock or someone else?
Yeah, I mean, I joked in the press box the other night. Now, it was before the Bills came back and won. How many weeks until we see Jordan Poyer back out there on the field starting at safety? And I originally looked at week three. I was like, well, it's a Dolphins team. It's a team where he just came from. He should probably know some of what they're doing. Obviously, he knows the Bills' defense very well. I'm not saying it's a good idea, but I don't think it's out of the realm of possibility. I am expecting it to happen at some point if the safety play is not up to the standard that it needs to be. And the problem with the safety position is that going into the Ravens game, I think we all thought, okay, Taylor Rapp is solid. What are you going to get from Cole Bishop? You didn't get a lot from Cole Bishop, and you didn't get a lot from Taylor Rapp either. Both of the safeties got beat a lot in that game. So now you have questions at two spots, at two positions. So I wonder what they ultimately do. I absolutely see a world where Jordan Poyer is back out there playing again. I'm not saying that's a good thing, but I could see it happening.
No doubt the safeties needed to be better. They had some plays you definitely look at and say, okay, like, they should have made that play. Maybe someone else does. I'm also going to say, if your safety, no matter who it is being asked to tackle Derrick Henry 15 yards downfield, you've already lost. Yeah. You can't be in that position. You have to have a better angle if you're Taylor Rapp. You got to be able to make a tackle if you're Cole Bishop. I get it. But man, Matt, I go back to, like, that shouldn't be what they're asked to do. And I know that's not what the Bills are asking them to do. They have to, but you got to be able to make a play before it gets to that point.
And that goes to your point about the defensive line and having to wrap them up immediately. You're getting them to take down. It was an underwhelming debut for a lot of the new defensive linemen. It's a really tough position to be thrown into. But I don't remember a point in the game where I was like, oh, look at TJ Sanders. There was one where he was unblocked and he kind of forced Lamar to throw it away. And I was like, okay, got some pressure there. That's good. I don't remember seeing anything from Deion Walker other than remembering if he was the guy who was supposed to block Kyle Hamilton on the field goal at the end that almost got blocked. So that was really my only takeaway from Deion Walker. My only takeaway from Joey Bosa, there was a couple moments where he still has some pass rush juice, but it was reading a play wrong. It was going for the running back instead of going for Lamar and getting his ankles kind of broken a little bit. So I do feel like we need to see more from the defensive line. And if we do, that will spill into more favorable positions for the linebackers, who I just criticized, and then for the safeties, who a lot of people have criticized.
We got a couple other pieces of news to get to from today. One big one that came out just before practice. We'll do that in a second. Want to remind you, Matt Bove at Matt_Bove, Sal Capaccio at Sal Sports. Follow us on Twitter, on X, on Instagram, wherever you find us. We appreciate it. We want to thank and congratulate our producer, Mike Robbie, because Matt and I tonight, along with Mike and everybody here who helps make It's Always Game Day in Buffalo what it is, are up for an award at the Buffalo Broadcasters Association annual Hall of Fame induction. We're not going to the Buffalo Broadcasters Hall of Fame. That's reserved for greats like Mary Alice Demmler and Rob Ray and Todd Brody, who are going in tonight. But we are nominated for the best use of social media. And I have to say, that's not on me. That's you and Mike.
No, it's Mike. It's Mike for sure. So that was cool when we found out that. And yeah. Sal's also nominated. I mean,
we both are.
We're both not. What is it? The sport?
We are the Sports Professional Journalist of the Year.
Yeah. How weird is it? So it's Sal and I going up against each other. And then also in the category is Dom Tibbetts, who I work with. So now I'm going up against two people who I work with. And then Josh Reed and John Scott. So good luck to all of the finalists. Yeah. I think that is what you're supposed to say.
It's amazing. Josh Reed, John Scott, Matt Bove, all the three sports directors, Sal Capaccio, Dom Tibbetts, who he works with. We are all up for Sports Professional of the Year, and we really appreciate that. That's amazing. I don't know who decided that we're all professionals, but we try to do our best job. So thank you so much for all that nominated. I'll be at the awards tonight for the induction to support Todd Brody, who, by the way, I just want to give everybody an idea. You might hear that name and say, who's that? That's the guy you hear on WGR that does a lot of commercials, and you hear the voice. Not the liner voice who says, the home of the Bills. It's the guy who does some commercials, but also he's one of the engineers during the Bills radio broadcast up in the booth, and he helps to make me and Chris Brown and Eric Wood sound better. So congratulations to everybody going to the Hall of Fame tonight. Congratulations to all the award nominees. You're not going to be there. If we win, if you win, I'll go up and accept it on your behalf. If they want me to do that.
Make sure to thank the Academy and all of the voters out there. Just make sure you got it covered if you do have to do that.
All right. So speaking of awards, how do you like that transition? Josh Allen, how many? 16th offensive AFC Offensive Player of the Week award. And this is well-deserved. Obviously, everybody saw this coming. Josh Allen clearly deserving of AFC Offensive Player of the Week. And already he is the favorite for 2025 NFL MVP.
Oh, did that happen immediately?
Yeah.
Figured it would. I mean, with this huge game, I figured him and Lamar would just immediately kind of skyrocket up there for the honor. Not a surprise. I mean, at what point is it? You know what I was thinking about? So Josh gets announced as the AFC Offensive Player of the Week. And for much of his career, that was a storyline. When he would win it, people would go in there and they would ask him about it. And I was thinking,
and it wasn't even against the Dolphins this time.
Right, it wasn't even against. Will anybody even ask Josh about winning AFC Offensive Player of the Week? Or is it so second nature that now it's not even on anybody's radar?
And he'll say, if he is get asked, it's a team award. I want to pull it up, the player's name, because sometimes I forget exactly who it was. But if you're thinking that Ed Oliver should have won AFC Defensive Player of the Week, what usually happens in these situations is you don't get it from
two.
You don't get it from two guys. So Jaguars linebacker Foisiade Olukun. I don't know if I'm saying his name right. I hope I am. I'm so sorry. He was named AFC Defensive Player of the Week. And folks, don't be mad. This guy had 10 total tackles, an interception, and a forced fumble.
Yeah, pretty good. It's pretty good. Pretty good defensive effort. Yeah. I can see. And they won. So yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. If the Bills lost the game, isn't Derrick Henry AFC Offensive Player of the Week?
Yes, absolutely.
Kyle Hamilton blocks the field goal. Derrick Henry, that's how this works.
Yes, I wholeheartedly agree with that. And I think that, guess what? We'll probably be talking about this another three or four times this year, because that's what it's been for the last three or four years, because there's just not an accolade, really, other than a Super Bowl. But there's not an individual accolade that Josh hasn't won yet.
It's amazing. And you're right. He's going to say it's a team award. It is a team award.
Can I say one thing?
Yeah, of course.
We didn't talk enough about Keon Coleman in the last episode. Go right ahead. I think Keon had, I don't want to say an arrival, because it is a game, but Keon Coleman, I went back and watched the game the other night. I'm sure a lot of people have gone back and rewatched it. In the fourth quarter, he was phenomenal. He made
His stats in the fourth quarter were, Matt, if you get eight targets in a game as a receiver,
good game.
He had eight in the fourth quarter.
I know.
And by the way, a 2-point conversion, just a ninth target, doesn't count on stats as a target, so he had nine. And he caught the ball for the touchdown, which wasn't his target. So when he was in a target or caught the ball in 10 plays.
Yeah, and there was the other 2-point conversion where he either got forced out of bounds or stepped out of bounds, whatever you prefer, that he did ultimately catch, but then it was ruled that it was an incomplete pass. So that was another play. It was just going back. Keon Coleman has been a very polarizing player since he got into the NFL. When they drafted him, you know, we probably sat at one of these tables that we're at right now, and we wondered, is this the type of receiver that the Bills need? Is his skill set what the Bills are looking for? You see the charts on social media about the separation, and people roll their eyes and they go, he can't get away from anybody. He's not fast. That's not what the Bills need. But the counter to that is he has given them a size advantage that they did not have otherwise, and now they're using him all over the field. It is just one game. But if you look at his chart of where he was running his routes from and where he caught his passes from, it's all over the place. Last year, for much of the season, it was on the boundary. It was, okay, we're going to take shots to him down the sideline, and we're just going to hope something happens. Think about some of the big moments he had in this game. The touchdown, he's rolling along the back of the end zone. He catches the deflection. The play that ultimately sealed the win was him cutting back to the middle of the field, getting inside leverage on the cornerback. Josh knowing that he could trust him to win that matchup, finding him there. Some balls on the sideline that he's throwing high, and it's Keon, go up and get it. And if you don't, I know it's not in harm's way, because it's just going to be so high that it's out and it's out of bounds, and it's another play, and we live to fight another day. I really liked what we saw from Keon Coleman, and that was a really encouraging thing to see after all of the Keon Coleman talk over the offseason, because sometimes you wonder, is he going to live up to the hype? Is there too high of expectations on him? So far, so good. That was an awesome, I mean, the best game of his career, probably. And the fact that he did it in week one against the Ravens on Sunday Night Football, I think now he's not going to really be sneaking up on people as a potential sophomore star.
I love that. It's a great take on Keon Coleman, his game. I'm going to be a little snarky here when I talk about one of the plays, which was him waving his arms, being open. But Josh Allen throws it down the field to Jackson Hawes, which is an amazing play. And on social media, I tweeted out the dots, and I heard people, some response. Well, Keon was right there waving his arms wide open. James Cook was wide open. Folks, we waited 20 years for a guy to say, I can still throw it on a laser to that guy who seems covered, but I'm going to get it in. What the hell are we complaining about? You want him to throw it to either Keon Coleman, who's wide open 6 yards off the line of scrimmage, or James Cook, who's behind the line of scrimmage? No. Josh Allen threw to Jackson Hawes. It was a laser. It was a dart. They got it down to the goal line, which maybe should have been a touchdown, by the way. This is what you've been waiting for 20 years. Don't you, We literally had a quarterback here we called Captain Checkdown because he did that too much.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I mean, the play, the throw, the arm arrogance. On that play, I think all three tight ends are on the field. Yes. Kincaid's on the field, Dawson's on the field, and Jackson Hawes is on the field. It was that was his first target in the NFL. His first target was a first catch, and it was almost a touchdown, and it was a huge game-changing play. So kudos to him. That was a really good sign to see. I think that they have to like
– we got a B right here. Sorry if everybody's watching.
I think they have to like what they've seen collectively from the three tight ends in their first week, but a lot of room to grow, and I do think that they're going to all be utilized in individual ways, which could lead this off. I loved – I mean, some of the blocking, going back and watching it, like Jackson Hawes, he didn't get a ton. I think he only played like 20% of the snaps. Somebody fact check me on that. I think it was like 19%, but noticeable when he was out there.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to have a role as a blocking tight end. And I will say, though, that Joe Brady said they wanted to get to Alec Anderson a little bit more in this game, but because of the way the game went, the more the 13 personnel was kind of dictating things. We got some bees just showing up all suddenly around us.
We brushed off this a little bit, but Taron Johnson not participating today. So if he doesn't participate for the rest of the week, I think we're both assuming that that's the Cam Lewis now taking over as the nickel corner, which – you know, to Cam's credit, he can do a little bit of everything. Taron's arguably one of the best players on this defense. That would be a notable loss for this team. But against the Jets, I can't think of a weapon who I'd be really, really worried about Taron Johnson not being able to cover unless Garrett Wilson lines up a ton in the slot. And I think he'll be everywhere anyway.
And we'll wait till tomorrow to get more on that because he did finish the game, Taron Johnson. He also spoke to us in the locker room. We didn't seem like anything was wrong. You know, it's Wednesday. He's a vet. Getting a day off for his quad, but we'll see. Does it go anywhere? Shaq Thompson also didn't practice today with a hamstring injury.
But we did see him out of practice, which is a good sign because he was said that he wasn't going to practice. And then he was the first player I saw when I walked out to practice. I was like, oh, that's interesting. And
oh, he practiced?
I mean, I saw him in pads.
Shaq Thompson?
I saw him in pads.
Okay, I didn't even notice that part of it. So thank you for telling me. I'll have to go back and look. But no, it could very well be. But we were told he wasn't going to practice. Matt's going to check on that. In the meantime, while he does that, just want to remind everybody, thank you so much. Nick Ryberg came on the podcast. That's Shaq Thompson. He's talking with Sean McDermott. McDermott's like, yep. So it looks like he was doing something in some capacity. Good job, Matthew. Nick Ryberg from Sojourn Travel came on last week. We were at the BFLO store, got to meet a lot of people. That's with the Buffalo Legends Cruise. And he said, man, right after that, had a great response. So if you have not contacted Sojourn Travel, if you haven't gone to WGR550.com, the cruise is next May. We're going down to the Caribbean. We're going to the British Virgin Islands. We're leaving from Miami. We're celebrating Thurman Thomas's 60th birthday. Thurman, Steve Tasker, Don Beebe. We got Scott Norwood, Del Rita, 26 shirts. A couple other surprise guests, I think, are lining up on the card as well. I'm going to be there being the guy doing all the stuff with the Bills on the boat as far as the memorabilia night and dinners and dance parties and all that. So go on there, WGR550.com. Should be a great time. But thanks for all of those who've responded and keep doing that because spots are going fast. And they're going to be limited. Okay. As the week goes on, we'll be back here on Thursday for another practice. We're not going to hear from Sean McDermott again until Friday, though, to get a bit more of an update on practice and specifically Tre'Davious White.
Yep. And we'll try and figure out, we should probably figure out a Jets analyst, reporter, beat writer, whatever it is, chat with them a little bit about this matchup specifically, what they've seen from the Jets, because admittedly, the Jets are a lot different now than they were when we even watched them last year. They've just got a lot of new faces. Aaron Glenn is somebody who really seems to be trying to change the culture. I thought it was interesting what Sean McDermott said. He said it reminded him of what they went through when Sean McDermott got there, about kind of how you have to change the culture from the ground up, and he feels like that's what the Jets are trying to do. Do you know the line for this game? Have you seen it?
I think it's 6, maybe 7.
When I looked, it was 7.5, I believe, maybe 6.5. So, you know, that's, I mean, the Bills are a big favorite, but it's not astronomical. I mean, we've seen this Bills team be like a 13 and a 14.
Well, that's true, but 7 points on the road is a really, really large spread.
It is. It is. And then I think next week it's right now an 8.5 point favorite.
I mean, that Dolphins. We'll be hitting you up about that Dolphins game because if they look anything like they did or didn't against the Colts this week, it could be really bad. They're going to be without. Now they're going to be without two of their offensive linemen, right tackle and left tackle, are going to be out, it looks like.
Isn't Storm Duck also hurt?
I don't know, but he's not.
I think so.
Is Storm? What is Storm Duck? He's a cornerback. That's right. But Storm Duck. I remember, what was the guy that played against the Bills and the Steelers? The Ducky, Duck
Hodges.
Duck Hodges. Okay.
There was a guy from like a PFF article that said Duck Hodges was the better quarterback in that matchup between Duck Hodges and Josh Allen. And that was in 2019. I specifically remember that,
that
football game. That's the Barkley Renegade game.
And he was doing his
thing. And yeah. Here's a fun one.
Yeah.
Name the player that caught the game-winning touchdown for the Bills in that game on Sunday Night Football.
It was a tight end, but not Dawson Knox. It was not Lee Smith.
Nope.
But it was somebody like that that I can't remember his name.
Tyler Croft,
yeah. He had the touchdown against the Rams to win it, too, here in the last second, right? All right. For Matt, for Mike Robbie, I'm Sal. Thanks for being with us today here on It's Always Game Day in Buffalo. Please subscribe to the podcast on Sal. On YouTube at Sal Sports, where you can watch us all the time. And if you missed any of it, you're listening on audio, you want to go watch it, it always lives right there, as well as on iTunes and wherever you pod here on It's Always Game Day in Buffalo. Thanks a lot.
It's not coming from Brett Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah, you're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys?
Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a great conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos.
Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.